Hi, this is Candace Michelle, and you've tuned into another episode of Our Community. You know, the issues at the port don't seem to be going away. The official firing of port manager Gary Dellinger at a recent port commissioners meeting, with commissioners Thompson, Barbas, and Christian voting for termination, and commissioners Davis and Martin voting against, and the decision to contract with city attorney Martha Rice for port legal representation at the most recent meeting on March 20th, set the stage for more interesting developments. A previous Our Community interview with former Port Commissioner Jim Relaford took a look at some of the history of the port and some of the current problems. If you missed hearing it, you can access it on our website, kciw.org, under the show Our Community. But there are still lots of unanswered questions. With me today is Skylar Windham, who until just recently was a port employee and witnessed firsthand some of the problems and subsequently started a recall petition for 4 out of the 5 port commissioners. Welcome to the show, Skylar.
Thanks, Candace. Happy to be here.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Good. So first, I'd like to get a sense of who you are, Skylar. Where were you born?
Well, I consider myself a local. I was born and raised here in Brookings all my life. I went away for school and traveled a little bit after graduating from high school, but my family's here, my friends are here. In fact, on my mom's side, we go back to the indigenous people of the region.
And you do?
I am a member of the Talawa Dene Nation.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Huh. So when you say you were born and raised here, I mean, so I'm looking at you, you look like you're about 12. I'm sorry, but you're clearly older than that. So how long have you been in the area then?
Well, I am 29 years old.
Okay.
It's hard to believe myself.
It is hard to believe, right?
Yes.
It goes by in a blink of an eye.
It does.
I know. And have you spent most of those 29 years here or how long were you away?
The past, I guess, 9 or so years, it's kind of a blur because I did bounce around in college a little bit. I graduated from Portland State, so I spent a couple of years in Portland. I spent some time in Argentina, traveling around the world,
wow,
teaching English.
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, the last 9 or so years, it's a bit hazy.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, I was from Brookings. I grew up here, and I remember going to Driftwood Tack when that was a local Western wear store. Do you remember that?
Yes, and wasn't it? Who owned that? It was. Was Roger Thompson's dad?
Exactly,
yes.
Walt.
Yeah. Yes, it was Walt. Oh God, I loved Walt.
Yeah, he was a character.
What a guy he was. Yep.
So, I mean, it's a small town. So you grow up here, like we all have connections. And
yes.
I didn't really know Angie Christian personally, mm-hmm, but I was really good friends with Morgan Golding, whose mom, Cindy, is really into quilting.
Okay.
So I know they were good friends. So we all have these connections where we all kind of know each other.
Yeah. And it's funny when you're in a small town, you do have connections with people, and sometimes the connections you have over here are completely different than the connections you have over here. And
oh, yeah,
when you start putting them together, it can get a little bit weird. And the funny thing, you know, when I first moved to town, this was the first time I've ever lived in a small town, so I was a little bit, you know, it was a little bit culture shock kind,
sure,
of thing, right? And it occurred to me that my next door neighbor knew by lunchtime what I had had for breakfast, you know? And the worst thing was that she actually cared.
Yeah.
You know? But that's kind of what a small town is like.
Definitely, yeah. In fact, that reminds me, growing up, my parents are both from here as well. They know everyone. So after I got my first car and I learned to drive, I'd go do my own stuff. And then I get home and my mom would ask me, well, what were you doing here today? And so-and-so saw you here today.
They already knew. They knew where you'd been.
So, yeah. I mean, I couldn't get away with anything. No.
Not that you really needed to, but still, yeah. No, it's kind of a funny feeling when, you know, the story about your activities gets home before,
yes,
you do.
Definitely.
So you went to Brookings Harbor High School then?
I did. I went to the high school, and mm-hmm, I'm one of the few that went to elementary and part of middle school at the Upper Chetco School.
Oh, the charter?
Before it was a charter school.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like a regular school?
Yeah, it was. And it went all the way up to 12th grade.
Wow. So, but it's just a small little thing. How did you, I mean, that's not a very big place to have kids.
No, there was a small group of us, and we ranged in ages from, you know, elementary all the way up to senior in high school. So it was a great experience. It was really, really nice.
So was that because you lived up that way? That
yes, my family lives up Gardner Ridge, so okay. It really wasn't that far away for them.
Okay. So Gardner Ridge, that means you saw the fire.
Yes. Yeah, and my parents had to evacuate, and I helped them get their stuff and animals out, and it was a crazy time.
It was a crazy time for all of us, but I can't imagine being on Gardner Ridge and seeing that monster coming towards you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was terrible. The sky was so red. It was surreal.
Yeah, it was. And ash dropping out of the sky. I mean, I went out, my car was covered in ash.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very weird. Okay, so you went away. You went to Argentina, which is, that's pretty amazing, and studied and taught English?
Yeah, well, I went to Argentina as an exchange student the first time through the University of Oregon to study Spanish.
Okay.
And I got hooked on the tango.
That's amazing.
I went to a milonga, which is a tango club, one night, kind of accidentally. I went to get something to eat with a friend, and suddenly locals started pouring in, and they set up an orchestra, and then more locals came in, and they started dancing. And
oh, what fun.
It was really, really cool. And, you know, prior to that, I always thought tango was something you saw in old cheesy posters, or it didn't really exist like it does. Like, people still dance real Argentine tango.
Yeah.
And yeah, anyway, that's another story.
But it's sort of an art form.
It really is.
I mean, it's amazingly complex.
It is.
And beautiful.
Most people don't realize real Argentine tango is not what you see on Dancing with the Stars, for example.
No.
It's totally improvisational. It's really a body language. And so that's why it's so hard and it takes so long to really learn. But it's really worth it. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. And then you went back to Argentina to teach?
To study more tango.
Skylar, didn't you say you taught English?
I did. So yeah, after the first exchange experience, I returned home and I came back to Brookings and stayed a stint and caught up with family and friends. And then I went to Portland and finished school. And then I got a job teaching English from my computer. And I taught for a company called Open English, which was started by a Venezuelan guy like 5, probably 7 years ago now. I worked as an English teacher for this company as an academic specialist. So I also helped them develop curriculum and other things like this. And it was great because, you know, I realized I could travel and pretty much go wherever I wanted since all I needed was my computer.
Wow.
And so I went back to Argentina for 6 months, I want to say. Like I said, I'm not one of those people that can just nail the year and the date that this happened.
It's,
it all goes by so fast. But I went back to Argentina, studied tango while I was teaching English, and then it got really, really hot down there. So I was like, I'm going to go to Spain now. And then I just worked my way east through Europe and then went north to London eventually, and then over to Hong Kong, and then eventually home.
Wow. You're a world traveler.
I guess. Yeah.
I love that. So when you did come home, is that when you took a job at the port?
Yes. Yeah. My original intention with school was to become a teacher, a Spanish teacher. And about that time, I was thinking that my old Spanish teacher at the high school might be ready to retire. She's not yet ready to retire, so...
Surprise, surprise.
I had to find something else to do.
You can't afford to retire, frankly, the way things are, right?
No kidding, no kidding.
Yeah. So you decided to go to work for the port then?
Yeah, I kind of get my eyes open for something that I would enjoy and be good at. And I saw an ad for office assistant at the port. And I thought, hey, you know, I like the port. I love boats. I like the ocean. I'm going to check it out. And I did. And I started there... right after the previous port manager, Ted Fitzgerald, had resigned. And it was July 6th, I want to say. It was the first working day after the 4th of July.
Okay.
In 2016.
Okay. And how was it to work at the port?
It was awesome. I loved it.
What did you like about it?
I For one, the staff. There was a great sense of solidarity among the staff. I mean, we were small. There mm-hmm. were eight of us. But it was really just a great team. And we all got along. We all helped each other. And there was always an overwhelming amount of work to do. But we all just kind of showed up and did our best every day to do what we could and get it done. And, you know, I liked the environment. And at the time, the location of the office was a little different. It was right next to the Bell and Whistle coffee shop in that retail complex.
Oh, yeah. Kind of where the shoe place used to be.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. On your feet shoes.
Yeah, right.
And I really liked that place because my desk had these two huge windows and I could see the boats from mm-hmm. my desk. So mm-hmm. I liked that. I liked the people that we worked with, you know, the local citizens and the mortgage holders, the tenants. You get to know everyone and it's nice.
It feels like it's a whole different world down there.
It really does.
And I was down there, you know, a couple of times and, you know, people walk into the port office and, you know, everybody knows each other and it's, you know.
Yeah, it's a different circle for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So you got down there and you were working in the office. What were your duties? What were you responsible for doing?
Yeah, initially, like I said, it was an office assistant. It was just a basic, you know, answering the phones, taking payments. But I had previously worked in administration and management. Actually, just out of high school, I got a job working in the Bay Area, managing one of the largest coffee warehouses on the West Coast.
No kidding.
Yeah, so all of the raw coffee that came into the Port of Oakland had to be stored somewhere for these big coffee companies like Starbucks and Pete's, and they would store their beans in our warehouses. And I was like a bilingual warehouse manager, and I sort of gave instruction to a lot of these.
That's great.
We call them lumpers, and they would.
What a name.
They would throw the big bags of raw coffee in and out of these containers that came in and out on trucks. And I would, you know, give them instruction on where to put them and I would mm-hmm. have to inspect these containers. So anyway, I had experience in management. And after a few weeks of working at the port, my abilities sort of became apparent. And
yes, they bubbled to the surface.
They bubbled to the surface.
Exactly.
And I mentioned, you know, everyone at the port sort of does what they're capable of mm-hmm. to contribute to the team. And right. I just started doing that. And before I knew it, I wasn't given an exact title, mm-hmm. and in fact, it's hard to give anyone an exact title because they wear so many hats, but
right.
I would say an executive assistant from what I've read about certain position descriptions, mm-hmm. just because I helped Gary with a lot of research, you know, implementing policy. I put together the invitation to bid for the new boarding dock ramp project with the Oregon State Marine Board, so a lot of legalese, paperwork type
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Drafting leases.
So Gary Dellinger was the port manager at that time. I'm trying to figure out. So when Ted left, there was somebody else who came in interim, I think. Was
right.
it Dave? No. Who was it?
So yeah, right when I started, they didn't have an interim manager and they were in the okay. process of finding one.
Okay.
It was only like a month or two later that Don Mann.
Don, yeah.
Came in
Don.
And he had worked for the Port of Brookings, managed it like maybe the 70s, a long time ago.
Okay. Don Manning.
Don Mann.
Really? Don Mann?
Don Mann. Don
okay.
the Man.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Because there's a Manning whose name I came across in one of the documents.
Right. Mike Manning.
Ah, okay.
Who was a commissioner and who currently owns BC Fisheries.
Okay. See, I'm trying to get all these names and, you know, it's hard to get them all straight. Okay. So Don Mann was the interim port manager then.
Correct.
Okay. And then what happened?
And then they were in the process of finding a permanent port manager, and we had received a few applications. And ultimately, Don Mann made the suggestion that, hey, you know, this individual, Gary Dellinger, has been working for the port. He's familiar with port operations, because at the time, Gary Dellinger was operations manager.
Okay. So he was already working for the port, just not in the capacity of port manager.
Exactly.
Interesting. Okay.
So yeah, once Don Mann had suggested that to the commission, it was kind of a no-brainer for everyone. and Gary Dellinger then became the port manager.
And how was it working with Gary?
It was great. It was great. And when he first became port manager, there was a period where he wasn't that confident yet. And if you know Gary, he's really laid back. And I don't know, it took a few weeks, maybe even a month or so, before he really became comfortable, like, taking charge and making those big decisions.
And that's so, it's so interesting that you say that, because I remember it, the meeting where Gary was fired again, that Commissioner Thompson called him a control freak.
Yeah.
And it surprised me, because that was not the impression that I was getting from any of the other people that I was talking with.
Right. I think there may have been a few gasps at that moment.
Sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly gasped myself, because it's just absurd to say that about Mr. Dellinger, because anyone that knows him, that has dealt with him, knows that's not the case. It's actually quite the opposite. You know, it's not that he's, you know, a reasonable man and he made decisions, like, he took his time. Not only did he take his time making decisions, but he always asked for input from staff or whoever happened to be in the office. He always wanted to make sure that he had thought about something from all angles. And no, he's definitely not a control freak at all, in my experience.
It just makes you wonder what happened that Commissioner Thompson felt that about Gary, that, you know, that there was that kind of animosity and that kind of, you know, it just seems kind of odd, you know.
That, right. Definitely. I would have to agree. You know, at that moment, at that hearing, that meeting that night, it just felt like the reasons that the commission gave to Mr. Dellinger's counsel for his termination, they weren't good reasons, and that was made clear during the hearing. And so at that point, they were just sort of grasping at straws, like, what else can we throw out there that maybe the public will latch onto? Because it was clear at that meeting that the public supported Gary and did not support the commission.
Do you have any idea sort of what led up to that? I thought there was something about BC Fisheries Dock or something, that there was some paperwork, or do you have any clue about what sort of led up to all of it?
A little bit. I mean, I can tell you what I know, and keep in mind that, especially since the port office had moved, my desk, my area, was in the very front and sort of disconnected from the rest of the office. So whereas before, you know, I felt more in the know of what's going on. Anyway, so yeah, it was like a week or so before Gary was terminated. The first time.
Yeah.
That the commissioners, particularly Jan Barbas, wanted to find more paperwork regarding the BC Fisheries dock, and specifically the emergency contract, the resolution that permitted this emergency contract to be given to Dave Hoover Construction.
So was the BC Fisheries dock falling apart or something? I mean, something needed to be done to take care of it or something immediately?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
It would still, there were some last, what am I saying? It wasn't 100% completed.
Okay.
Like, there were some final, I can't think of the word. Okay. Anyway, it wasn't 100%.
Okay.
But yeah, there was nothing like pressing or any reason that I knew.
But there was a resolution somewhere for an emergency repair to it.
Correct. We did have the resolution. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but it was signed by Ted Fitzgerald and chairman of the board at that time, Roy Davis.
Okay, so that would have been a couple of years previously, right? Because
right.
Fitzgerald was gone. Okay. Okay, so there was that resolution. And so what was the Commissioner Barbas was look trying to find that resolution or?
And I'm not sure, you know, what made him want to look into this more, but for whatever reason he did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want everyone to know that Gary wanted to do what the commission wanted him to do. Mm-hmm. And he was going through all the records we could find. And, you know, at one point, right before the end, like the Wednesday, Thursday before that meeting, it was me, Danielle, and Kim all at the back table with Gary going through these big, giant books of just port records and reading everything and trying to find more. Port record keeping was not great in the past. There are honestly months of meetings that we could not find.
Wow.
And yeah, it's incredible that things were not kept up better than they were. But anyway, we couldn't really find much. So that was part of the issue, because all of a sudden the commission wanted this information right now, and we were honestly looking and looking, but there wasn't much to look for. So we were still in the process of research, and then suddenly they want it to be turned into the DA for investigation.
So that's interesting. They didn't actually have the documentation that they wanted, and nevertheless, they decided to turn it over to the sheriff's department.
Right. And so that was a really stressful time. I know Gary was very stressed because we were working hard to dig up this information. But keep in mind, it takes a lot of time to go through all of this paperwork. And
you were trying to run a port at the same time.
Totally. And that was a big part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And Gary just reached the point where, you know, he had me proofread an email that he wrote to one of the commissioners. And basically it was like, you know, do you want us to run the port and focus on the future? Or do we want to focus on digging up the past? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we're short staffed and we need to do one or the other. And yeah, Gary was just he reached the end of his rope because it didn't make a lot of sense to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why shortly after, you know, Gary was suddenly terminated, all the staff assumed that it was going to be called insubordination because of that.
Right. Did the commissioner, whoever he was writing to, get back to him and, you know?
So I didn't hear the response. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's an issue saying that commissioner was Jan Barbas. Mm-hmm. And what really got under my skin was that there was a meeting in December before the termination when they were discussing this potential investigation. And they had voted, Barbas made a motion for Gary and staff to look into this and to turn it over to the DA for investigation and to cooperate and sign whatever needed to be signed. Well, anyway, the very next morning, like, as I'm listening to this recording and getting caught up, we find out that Mr. Barbas himself had gone to the sheriff's station. And I had to listen to the meeting again. There was no motion made for him to go there. It was for the port to go there for Gary and staff to find this information and present it. Mm-hmm. So the port wasn't given an opportunity to do as the commission voted.
That's interesting and odd.
Yes, very odd. And that's just a good example of what part of the problem with this commission is. They're acting, you know, as individual commissioners, and they're supposed to act as one unit.
Mm-hmm. So how did you find out that Gary was terminated?
Well, now I'm trying to think. I think I've blocked it out.
Because there was a port meeting. My understanding is there was a port meeting January 5th or whenever that was. And they went into executive session. And it was during that executive session that they voted to fire him.
Right.
And then came out and asked for his signature or whatever. So it had to have been like the next day or something that you guys found out.
Right. You know what? I think it was the following morning I received a call from Mr. Dellinger, and he explained what had happened. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting in my truck, and yeah, he called, and I was just in disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no reason that I could think of to terminate him. He was a great manager. He's a decent guy, and everything had been going so well. The commission had been applauding his performance.
Well, they had given him great reviews for his work performance.
Right. Yeah.
Which, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And then, so that was Saturday. And then the following Sunday, I received a call from Commissioner Christian, and she was asking for my help and that it was an emergency. And I asked her what about, and she explained that they had made the decision to terminate the manager, and she was crying on the phone. And of course, I'm assuming that there had to have been something egregious that happened, which,
right.
You know, I accept that things happen, and maybe there's something I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Commissioner Christian said, you know, could I come into the port and help change passwords on the port email accounts just to keep everything on the up and up?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I didn't have an issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way it should be. It's the port's
right.
records. And, yeah, I didn't see an issue. So I met her there, like within 15 minutes of the phone call at the port office. And it was interesting because she and I had just walked in the office, and not a minute later, Kathy Lindley pulled up.
Huh.
And, you know, none of us had heard anything about Kathy Lindley coming. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure what she did there that day after I left, but I know
mm-hmm.
that she was there for a while. But yeah, anyway, I went in there with Christian and changed the passwords. And while I was there, I asked her many, many times, why did this happen? Like,
mm-hmm.
I was still just, I couldn't believe it. And I prodded pretty hard, and she would not give me anything. And she kept crying and saying she just had to believe the truth. And yeah, she wouldn't
wow.
give me anything.
Wow. I mean, that's kind of strange.
It's very strange. And, you know, especially we're so short-staffed, we're almost like a family there. And to just make such a rash decision without any concern for how it's going to affect the port staff. And as I was leaving, I asked her if she could just tell me how the vote went, who voted what.
Mm-hmm.
And she simply told me that it would be in the minutes and I could read it later. And
wow.
I thought, you know what, I'm coming in on my day off
mm-hmm.
to help you out and help the port, and you can't even give me the courtesy
mm-hmm.
of telling me that information, which is public information.
Mm-hmm.
And I was offended by that.
And from what I understand, Gary had no knowledge beforehand that his performance was even being questioned, let alone that he was going to be terminated.
That's totally right. He was blindsided. And as was Commissioner Roy Davis, he was unaware that the meeting was going to be about the termination of Mr. Dellinger.
Which is odd to me, but
I think it's odd to everyone.
Yeah, yeah. So, what was the staff reaction to this?
There were a lot of tears. There was a lot of anger. No one could believe it. No one could think of a reason why. There were a few of us that, excuse me, like I said, wanted to believe that something egregious, really bad had happened, because we just could not fathom why they would terminate Gary. The Monday morning, the first workday after his termination, we were instructed to meet at the office. Even the outside guys were to come in, and we were going to have a meeting with Commissioner Christian and Commissioner Barbas. And we were supposed to receive some sort of update about what had happened. Well, we barely received any information beyond they had terminated Gary. And it's interesting to note that Commissioner Christian and Commissioner Barbas were sitting at this big conference table alone, and the rest of the staff was in a line against the wall. So, you know, that speaks a lot right there. It was definitely us versus them from that first Monday after his termination.
Wow. Wow. That's not a good environment.
Not at all. Yeah. And, you know, everyone has the same questions. Why? They couldn't tell us. They wouldn't give us anything. And there was just a lot of anger with staff, and we were really upset to lose Gary. We didn't want to be there.
So was that feeling shared by, the fishermen and the liveaboards and, you know, the rest of the people at the port?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it was almost impossible to get actual work done the following week because we were just inundated with concerned people, mortgage holders, tenants wanting to know what happened. And it didn't make sense to anyone. This is what people kept saying. Well, Gary was a great manager. He's all about transparency. He's all about by the book, because those of us that have worked with Gary know that he is by the book and he wants to be transparent. And something just didn't add up.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see it. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Right.
And there have been no reasons actually given for why he was terminated, and it's kind of hard to understand.
Yeah, it's still hard to understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they voted to terminate him, and then they had another meeting, I guess, after talking to counsel and figured out that they couldn't do it that way and reinstated him, only put him on leave kind of thing. So while all of that stuff was going on, what did the staff, I mean, were you like following each move with bated breath kind of thing? Or, you know, were you just kind of numb at that point?
Some of us were numb, and some of us, I mean, of course, we're all following every step of the way. When he was reinstated, there were a few staff members that were kind of relieved and a little excited, like, you know, maybe we'll get Gary back, and maybe it was just a mistake, and everything will come back to normal. I myself saw it as simply a legal move, like, oops, we made a mistake, let's make this right and hire him so we can fire him the legal way.
Yeah. Interesting and unfortunate, but
yes.
Yeah. So what prompted you to even start thinking about a recall petition?
Well, as soon as this happened and they refused to give us any information, we all had a gut feeling that it was going to be called insubordination related to the digging up this paperwork on the BC fisheries dock. Anyway, we all kind of knew that it wasn't a good reason and something was going on. I had a bad experience one night at a commissioner meeting myself when they had asked me, you know, how something worked, and I explained that there were simply two options. One option cost the port more money, one didn't, and they voted to cost the port more money. And I, from that moment, I really lost trust in the commission as a whole. And where am I going with this?
I know how that gets. No, the recall petition.
Yeah. Oh, so anyways, I had reasons to distrust the commission. And we knew that they were acting individually, and they're not supposed to do that. So there was just this feeling of shadiness going on with the commission. And so I started calling, you know, anyone I could think of to help. You know, the county office, the Secretary of State. I called other ports, like, well, how do you handle an unruly commission that's not being professional? Because I just wanted someone with authority to offer some insight. And what I found was that there really isn't, other than the people, the citizens of the district. And so, you know, the positions they hold for the Port District are pretty powerful, really. And you know, people scoff and say, oh, it's a volunteer position. Well, it is, but it's still, you know, a powerful position, and they make important decisions, and we need to hold them accountable. So, yeah, ultimately, it just got down to the fact that our only recourse is through a recall. So I worked with the county office and did a little research and formed four different committees myself. So I hold the position of chief petitioner and treasurer on four separate committees.
And why did you have to do four separate committees?
What do you mean?
Well, because there were four separate recalls, is that, I mean, you had to do four separate committees to do, was each committee, you know, for the recall of that particular commissioner?
Correct. Yeah. Because as I saw it, as the staff saw it, we had four commissioners that were a problem, and they were the four commissioners that voted yes to terminate Gary.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in our eyes, they violated Oregon law when they did that.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to recall them.
Are you the only person who is on that committee? Is that how the committees were set up?
Yeah, so there could be more people on the committee. Mm-hmm. There's different positions that other people could hold. But at the time, I was feeling frantic.
Mm-hmm.
Not only was I stressed with the amount of people coming in saying, hey, what's going on? We heard Gary got fired. But I'm trying to do the port work, and I'm dealing with the stress of this commission that's acting like this. And what am I going to do? So I was feeling frantic, and I wanted to find the quickest solution. And so I didn't really have time to, you know, go ask people, hey, are you interested in joining this committee for this petition?
Mm-hmm.
When I didn't have to. Legally, I could do it myself. So I just went through the process and did it myself.
And what is so what is the recall process? You form a committee, and then what?
So you form a committee, you have to have a bank account for each committee.
Okay.
What else? So you go to the county office, you have your petition paperwork where you have to give the reason that you want to start a petition, and that is either approved or denied by the county clerk.
Mm-hmm.
So the reasoning was that they fired him illegally.
Mm-hmm.
They posted that they were having an executive session pursuant to that ORS because he had declined an open hearing when he was never given the opportunity for an open hearing. So that's really what started this whole issue. And the petition was approved by the county. All four petitions were approved, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And
so the only one that you didn't take a petition up for was Roy Davis.
Correct.
Because the other four commissioners voted to fire Gary Dellinger.
Exactly. And, you know, not only did Commissioner Roy Davis vote no, but he was adamantly against the other four commissioners. And so, you know, that tells me something as well. If Roy Davis had voted yes to terminate him and it was unanimous, and then I think I would have no choice personally but to believe that they made a right decision. But because Roy was so adamantly against what they had done, I knew something was amiss.
And still is adamantly opposed to that.
Very.
From what I've seen. Yeah. So you started these petitions, and how did you... What are the rules? Like when does the petition, when do they need to be turned back in? How many signatures do you need? You know, what's the...
So there's some percentage based on the number of registered voters in the district.
Mm-hmm.
The county office told me that I need 856 signatures for each petition.
Okay.
They suggest that you shoot for about 10% over that because a lot of people that think that they are registered voters actually aren't. So after I complete the petitions and I turn them into the county, they have to go through and verify each signature. And they say shoot for 10% over just to be safe. And once that is complete and you have enough signatures, then the recall will be put on a ballot. So that will be sent to all registered voters in the district to vote this person out or no. But actually, before it's put on a ballot, and the petition is complete and you have enough signatures, the commissioner is given the opportunity to resign.
Oh.
Yes. The county will contact them and say, hey, we have received this many signatures for this petition. Will you resign? And they have 5 days to consider this and resign. If they choose not to resign, they have to provide a written statement saying why they refuse to resign.
Hmm.
And that statement will be printed on the ballot.
Ah, interesting. Okay. So you need 825, but you should get 10% over that,
right?
Basically,
856. But
856. Okay, and where are you at this point?
I haven't taken a recent count, but let's see. The last time I did it was 2 days after the hearing. We received 200 signatures in the 2 days after the hearing. So that's something. But right now, I would estimate we're at about 550 for each petition. So we're a little over halfway there.
And when do those petitions need to be turned in?
They need to be in by April 16th.
Okay. So that's another 3 weeks, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's enough time. I should be out there more myself, but, you know, I have other irons in the fire. Just
you're no longer working at the port, right?
Right.
So how did that all happen?
Well, after I started the recall, I was working at the port and I showed up at work every day, but it was so stressful because I knew commissioners were against me. They knew I started the recall and it just felt like a lot of pressure, like there was a target on my back, which admittedly I put on my own back. But I, you know, I would have my coworkers come to me and say, hey, Commissioner Barbas pulled us to the side and said, do you think Skyler is undermining port projects? Is he undermining our efforts to get grants? And when I heard that, yeah, it hurt when I heard that, because really the only reason that I was still there was because we were in the middle of the paperwork for the grant project for the boarding docks. And I was the one that prepared that paperwork and there were deadlines to meet. And yeah, I felt like I was the linchpin holding all that stuff together and I owed it to the port to stay. If I hadn't been in the middle of those important projects, I probably would have walked because I was disgusted by the commission's actions. So when I heard that commissioners were going behind my back, I just felt horrible. Like I wasn't trusted and I wasn't valued as an employee. And, you know, we all put so much of our heart into our work. And just for that to not be acknowledged by our governing body, it hurt.
Mm-hmm. And at that point, there was no interim manager. You were still managerless.
Exactly. And that reminds me of something interesting. At that point, we were managerless, but we found out like weeks later, just before I took my leave, that when they were in that executive session, the commission, and they voted to terminate Gary, they had also voted to appoint me, Skyler Windham, as office manager, and they voted Brent Ferguson as yard manager or harbor master or some title like this. And it's interesting that the commission did not tell us this that Monday morning after the termination.
How odd.
I don't think they anticipated the backlash from staff.
Mm.
And I think maybe that's why they didn't tell us.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows?
So were you actually promoted to office manager then?
Yes, if you go back and look at the minutes,
wow.
I absolutely was.
And but were you told that you were?
No.
Okay, that's just a little weird. Okay, so what then, what and when did you leave? And, you know.
Well, like I said, I'm bad with dates.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, after I heard that, you know, Barbas was asking if I was undermining the port, I just didn't feel like I could stay. Like,
right.
I didn't feel I could stay in good conscience to support that commission, but I also didn't feel like I could stay at that point because I wasn't, like, the port itself didn't trust me. The commission didn't trust me. So,
right.
You know, I was fighting a losing battle as an employee.
Right.
So, in the port employee handbook, it says each employee can take 2 months personal leave, which I elected to do just to clear my head, distance myself from the port, especially while I was in the midst of this petition to recall them.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it'd be better for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And how did everybody else feel about you leaving?
They didn't take it well.
I bet they didn't.
I got a lot of phone
calls.
You're
doing what?
Well, yeah, a lot of phone calls, a lot of texts.
I bet. Yeah.
From coworkers.
Buddy, you're leaving us. Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, right.
Don't go.
But it is, you know, sometimes that's exactly what you do need to do, is you just need to be able to clear your head and kind of get a fresh perspective.
And that's about when, you know, this Facebook video came about.
You did quite a good job as far as I'm concerned. I saw that video and was very impressed.
Well, thank you. It's, what can I say? It's not typical of Skylar. I'm not one that really likes the spotlight. I don't like putting my face out on Facebook, but it's just one of those things that, you know, I saw injustice. We see it happening and someone has to stand up, you know, especially in my position, someone that was working at the port at the time and knows kind of what went on. I just felt compelled to tell everyone, hey, there's a serious problem. So I put that video together and put it out there in hopes that we would get more signatures for the petition. And I really wanted people to see who I was as a person, because I would hear through the grapevine, and I know that some people just assume, oh, I'm a disgruntled employee,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, I'm best friends with Gary and it doesn't matter what he did, I would still be fighting for him. And that's really a rumor that if some people still believe it, I really want to dispel that, because, you know, for people that know me, family and friends, I like to be objective. I like to follow rules. I like everything to be above board. And so it doesn't really matter if I liked Gary or not. What I disapprove of is the lack of professionalism and respect for the law, respect for port staff. All of these things that are happening, that's just wrong. And so that's why I encourage people to go talk to other staff members, talk to port tenants, come to port meetings. It's like, it's not just me out of spite, you know, trying to get these people recalled. It's that I have a respect for professionalism and the law, and I want to see it upheld.
Yeah, there was there were a lot of comments on Facebook after one of the earlier meetings after Gary was fired, and it was funny because there were different takes on it. You know, some people saw it through the eyes of, you know, the staff, and, you know, that there was something here that was not right. And other people, you know, their comments on Facebook were, you know, yeah, it's just disgruntled, you know, staff who, you know,
oh yeah,
like Gary, and, you know, it was so I thought it was very interesting. But for me, watching your Facebook video was pretty compelling. I mean, I watched you and kind of looked in your eyes there and thought, you know, this looks like a, and he acts like an honest young man who, you know, has got a point.
And I'm glad that I conveyed that, because, you know, I was hoping that it would be obvious. You know, I wasn't really ranting, I wasn't name calling, and, you know, I still don't. There's certain aspects of commissioners that I like, and, you know, I hope they do well in their businesses and things like this. But it's just, you know, as a commissioner and the responsibility that you have for the public you serve, it's, we have a problem that needs to be taken care of, and I just want people to see that.
Did the commissioners, you know, come to the staff individually, you know, even before Gary was fired or shortly thereafter? And you know, my understanding is that the commissioners are supposed to be not really hands-on.
Right, yeah. They direct the manager what to do, and then
right.
the manager directs staff. So we really didn't have a lot of interaction with the commissioners other than when they would need to come in and sign checks,
mm-hmm.
Which happened, you know, a few times a week. But, you know, we didn't really deal with them a lot. If they mm-hmm. if they needed something or they had a question, they would go through Gary.
Mm-hmm. So when you left for your, what was it?
My leave of absence.
Your leave of absence, yes, your personal leave. What did you decide to do? Because you're not working at the port anymore, right?
Right. Well, I began substitute teaching because I had that teaching license and I went to school to be a teacher. So it was I wasn't that worried about, you know, employment and finances. So I was one of the lucky ones, you know. I didn't have to stay at the port.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I started substitute teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I received an offer from the high school principal to stay long term and finish this school year as a full-time teacher.
Excellent.
So yeah, I was super happy about that. And that's what I've been doing since. And when I got that offer, that's when I went and met with Kathy Lindley and just let her know, you know, I would be resigning from my position at the port.
Mm-hmm. So what's your sense of the port? You know, you saw it when you were growing up, and I'm assuming you spent some time at the port you were growing up. What's your sense of the direction that it's going in?
It's hard to say at this exact moment. There was a lot of upward momentum with Gary. We had a lot of things, you know, going for us, going for the port. I think in the past, different managers had different ways of dealing with the media, especially, you know, they would work different angles. Gary was kind of like just showing everything for what it was, warts and all, and pointing out the issues and things that had been deteriorating for years, but never were really brought to light. So, yeah, I think our finances were in order. You know, I think it's been talked about that our audit came back clean with no red marks for the first time ever in the port's history, I think.
First time ever? That's okay.
I think.
That's a little sad, but.
It is. It is. And, you know, you mentioned the past. The port has, you know, kind of a sordid past. There's been a lot of turmoil for a lot of different reasons. And there's a lot of people that have lived here forever. And they have that mindset as well, that although the commissioners change, the management changes, for some reason, there's still all this drama stuck to the port. And it's amazing. Even as I sit here right now, there are people out there that insist Ted Fitzgerald is behind the recalls. And I just, you know, I can talk to them till I'm blue in the face. I don't know what else
because
to say.
Because you actually know who's behind the recalls because it's you.
Yeah, and I don't even know Ted.
Yeah, you don't.
So
that's pretty funny.
It's crazy.
He's getting credit for something you did.
Exactly.
That's silly.
He's stealing my thunder.
Yeah. So your feeling, you know, before Gary was fired was that the port was moving in the correct direction.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's the public's opinion as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that people, you know, have said that it wasn't looking very good, that it was looking a little shabby, but that things were starting to get cleaned up a little bit. Equipment was being auctioned off or gotten rid of or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had noticed that too. Like you said, growing up, hanging out at the port, you notice things accumulate. There's gear storage. It just looks messy. Mm-hmm. There were boats that had been abandoned in the boatyard and just left there. They've been there for years.
Wow.
4 years. And yeah, that's, you know, with Gary and I was there and we all started to clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
And the port had, you know, way more money in savings and it was all looking good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why this was such...
So you sort of feel like if it was looking that good and things were going in so the right direction, there must be something that we don't know that is horrific, that you would get rid of somebody who was making that kind of a positive change just, you know, kind of like at the drop of the hat, just get rid of him. It just...
Oh, yeah.
There must be something we don't know.
You would think. But
you were there, so.
I was there.
If you don't know it.
And you were at the hearing. Which,
yes.
If there had been something that we all should have known, it would have been brought to light there.
You certainly would think so, wouldn't you? I don't know how it could not have been brought, unless they are absolutely not allowed to talk about it because of the pending lawsuit, which is, I suppose, is a possibility.
Perhaps.
So one other thing that was kind of flitting around in my brain, there was something about a piling thing that the pilings weren't deep enough. They were supposed to be 20 feet deep and they were only 4 feet deep or something. What do you know what that all relates to?
So the port has a history of not doing things the right way.
I'm shocked.
And, you know, people say it's Curry County and corners are cut.
Yes, and no hurry in Curry.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. So they were supposed to do something and they didn't do it.
Right, yeah. There were supposed to be X amount of materials purchased. Mm-hmm. The pilings were supposed to be put in 20 feet deep. Mm-hmm. Right now, there are very few pilings out there compared to the original specifications.
Really?
And each piling is about 4 to 5 feet deep. So...
So they're supposed to be 20 feet deep and they're 4 to 5 feet deep. That's
just... not a good feeling.
Yeah, not so much. That's kind of odd.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I would suspect that somebody would be looking into that as to the why and wherefore of that.
Yes and no. I mean, I think it all stems from years ago and, you know, previous port management and okay. It's...
So maybe there is no point in going backwards.
Right. I don't know what
right.
that would solve.
Right. Right. This has been, you know, pretty interesting and pretty amazing. It almost feels like, the Keystone Cops or something, you know. But, you know, I have a feeling that there is more to know, always more to know. And the latest thing is they basically, you know, let go of the port attorney. Coffee was
right,
and they've now hired, or they're trying to hire Martha Rice, who is the city attorney, which seems odd.
Yeah,
to kind of change horses in the middle of the stream, but whatever. You know.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think Mr. Coffee's probably relieved at this point.
He probably is. Yes,
and Martha's probably a little nervous,
and she should be. I was walking out to the parking lot at the end of the meeting where they. Fired Dellinger again, and Coffee said to me, please tell people it's not my fault.
Well, I think he made that clear during the meeting.
Yes, he did. Skylar, I want to thank you so much for coming on and giving us this history. It's very interesting stuff, and I'm sure that there is more to come, and I'll let you know if you can come back on and we can talk some more.
All right, Candace, sounds good. Thanks again for having me.
Thank you, Skylar. And thank you for being part of the listening audience. And this has been Our Community. And we've been talking with former port employee Skylar Windham. And this is Candace Michelle. See you next time.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.